And even him.
Dude, I feel like such an idiot. How is he Canadian?
Well,
how I mean, is that a thing? How does that name not scream French, man?
Well, there is Canada. There is Quebec.
I can't believe it. I feel so stupid. I thought he was actually French this whole time, which is why he got that 8-minute standing ovation in Cannes.
Imagine if he actually had been French, though.
I know. He 20 minutes? Would have a 20-minute standing ovation. But like I said, just remember, maybe the movie didn't actually warrant an 8-minute standing ovation. Maybe it really only warranted a 1-minute standing ovation. So go in there with low expectations, man.
See,
it's like an earnings report.
We say that, but at the same time, it's been released in 17 countries already and has made, I think, $35 million
so far. Okay, so I just Googled it. Here we go. Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not a big believer in Rotten Tomatoes, but they scored it at 90%.
Jeez,
so.
What were they at 10% thinking?
Did you know that over $5 trillion exchanges hands on a daily basis? That's an average of over $220 billion an hour. Now, how does this much money move every single day, and why does it move the way it does? Here on Drunkenomics, two bartenders who also happen to be students at the University of Nebraska Graduate School of Business are going to sit down and drink to the global economy and try and translate it into English. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a stiff one, and have a drink with us to the comedy that is the global economy.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Drunkenomics, the drinking podcast with the economics problem. The VIX closed at 25.71 today. You know what that means? That means that I am your gracious host, your more gracious host, James Goldwater, alongside the less gracious host this week, Mr. Aaron Wong.
Yeah,
how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, dude. I'm a little bit upset. I think I might have put too much ice in my whiskey.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, I'm not upset about the VIX being at 25.71. I'm just upset about me putting too much ice in my whiskey, right? So, on accident.
I was
going
to say, that means, all right, make it a double.
yeah, I know. Okay, no, that's a good remedy. You know what? Good idea.
In it to win it.
I'm going to rectify that by adding some more whiskey to my glass. Thank you. What a brilliant idea.
Hey, it's the drunkenomical solution.
Yeah, there's the economics problem being solved right there. Anyways, so glad you could join us.
Guys, I'm back after our week off.
Yeah,
so.
Did you have a happy birthday?
I mean, yeah, no, I had a good time. I went to the Jimmy Buffett musical.
Oh, that's right, you did. Are you still hungover or no?
No, I actually...
Pack open another beer and then just keep drinking, right?
Well, I'm currently drinking a Florida Man, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah. What all goes into that?
It's a double IPA from Cigar City Brewing in Florida, so...
Oh, dang, okay.
I figured, why not?
Cigar City Brewing, man.
I do too. The Maduro Brown. The Maduro Brown is a fantastic...
Yeah. That Maduro brown is, it's, I love that brown ale by them.
Yeah, so
but yeah.
Those of you that are...
awkward way to segue into us promoting our social media real quick.
Yeah, so we did have a fun time talking to some of you guys over this break because you got in touch with us either wondering if we missed a week or if there just was a week was missing. And the answer is no, we were just taking the day off. Like I said, we're back and more gracious than ever, or at least I am.
Yeah, yeah,
Aaron,
you are.
Less gracious.
I'm not that gracious
than
right
normal.
Now. Yep.
Yeah, no, so we took some time. But if you want to know where we are, we try to respond to you even when we're not releasing content. Or we take some time for ourselves, we still take the time for you guys. And that's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drunkenomical.
Drunkenomical.
Still can't do it.
Not my best attempt, but I've started drinking. I started drinking a while
ago. Still good.
But okay, if you think so,
still better than
I'll
mine.
Take it from you.
And then
not bragging. And then from there, you can find our Discord.
There you can find the Discord. Right? You can find an invite to the Discord.
Yeah.
Join the Drunkenomics Discord. You can join the rest of the Econolics and Drinkonomists.
Yes.
Giving you guys two options now.
One of two parties. And
absolutely.
Yeah. You could always bring your economics problems there. And, you know, we could try and sort something out.
You could also bring your drink problems here. And we'll see if
yeah,
we can
exactly.
sort those out.
We could help you find a solution.
Well, technically, alcohol is a solution. So
no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But
I learned anything from high school chemistry.
I know. But if you mixed more solutions into it, such as like bitters, sweet vermouth, I don't know, a lot of cool solutions that you could come up with alcohol. I'm just saying, a lot of cool cocktail recipes.
Out of solutions into cocktail town, I agree.
Yeah, just think about that cigar brewing company.
You can also find our Drunkenomics merch shop at drunkenomics.myspreadshop.com.
Nice.
You get a hoodie, a hat, anything else. Throw up your flag. Let everyone know. Econoholics here. Drinkonomist here.
Yeah.
And that way people know.
That's a guy that knows how to stay drunkenomical. So,
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go right into it. I mean, last time we spoke, last time we all had a drink together, we talked about payment for order flow. And I just want to touch up on a couple of things real quick. So,
yeah, a few corrections from us on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated subject. One of the things I wanted to say was market makers. What are market makers? I forgot to define that last week. So market makers are essentially, they make the market. How do they make the market? They trade very fast and very frequently, and they try to profit off the bid-ask spread. So generally speaking, you'll see a stock that is trading at $100 for the bid price, and the ask price is $100.05. So generally speaking, they trade in between that spread. They buy for 102, they sell for 103. You know, they keep the markets really thin, or they buy for 102 and they sell for 102 cents, 0.25.
Yeah,
but whatever. So, you know, they do that. And, you know, when the market is going down, there's ways they can make money off of that. When the market goes up or when the stock goes up, there's ways they can make money off doing that. But generally speaking, because they trade so frequently, because they trade so fast, I mean, they probably execute thousands of trades per millisecond. And that keeps the bid ask spread really, really narrow. The downside of that really is, you know, there's not much profit per trade, but the upside is, you know, like
there's a lot of trades.
There's a lot of trades.
There's so, arguments that this makes the market more efficient, and that's a good thing.
I think it does.
I look at it and I think payment for order flows, like inherently you look at it and there's something anti-competitive about it. There's something where the investor's getting kind of shafted.
I don't think they're getting shafted
you're right. They're perhaps not getting as good a deal as they could be if they were paying to do this, but this is the price you have to pay for commission-free trading.
Granted, if you were trading, you know, 1,000 times per millisecond, or if you really want to look at it this way, if you're trading millions of times minute, then yeah, I mean, this order flow information could be worth a lot of money. It will be worth a ton of money to you. Obviously, as you can see by the revenue figures that these brokers
are making. Yeah, so I'm looking at the revenue figures and I can say the total for 2020
It's a lot. Billions of dollars.
$2.6 billion was made in payment for order flows
to brokerage firms in 2020. And this year already, we're almost past that. So
at the half year mark of 2020 when we were at $1.8 billion.
Yeah.
So really we're looking to add an extra $1 billion maybe to that, that market. So go 2.6 to 3.6
but,
billion.
Yeah, but my thing is like, I still think it's a good thing because, there's ways around it, right? Like we can always place a limit order.
It's not inherently bad. I'm not saying it's inherently bad. I'm just saying like, if you look at it, you realize there's often a phrase that gets used that if you're not the customer, you're the product.
Yep,
and if you're not paying, then you become the product. So like Facebook, if you're not the customer, i.e. you're not paying to use Facebook, you're the product. They're trying to advertise you. They're trying to gather information from you. So that's essentially what's happened. It's that being applied to investing.
Yeah. And most of these brokerage firms, they're pretty accommodative. They let you pick where you want to route your orders. A lot of them do. So, a lot of people think
dangerous, risky.
Yeah. A lot of people think dark pools are such a bad thing.
So keep it up, guys. Yeah. Okay. So dark pools, as I understand it, they're private exchanges kind of held usually by institutionals or big block investors so that when they're moving into or out of a position, they can do that without disrupting the market too much, right? So like Warren Buffett goes in or comes out of something, that's a big deal, you know, because one,
everybody wants to follow him around the markets because they think he knows something that we all don't, or he sees value better than anybody else does.
Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but say he's buying a 1% of Intel. That's not a substantial chunk,
right? Exactly, and it drives up demand.
Absolutely. He would probably do a lot of that through a dark pool so that he can acquire that. And as he acquires it, he knows the prices, but it's done without the market reacting to him. Yeah. It just looks like regular volume trading.
Yeah. So dark pools are just, you know, it's basically market makers, I think, with each other.
Yeah.
You know, off exchange trading, right? But it's another thing that supplies liquidity to the actual stock market. About 35% of all trades are on dark pools are right.
Yeah, and it would, but that would make sense because
this is based on 2014 data.
Well, also the concept is that if you're doing a huge block, say you're buying a huge block, it allows you to piece together a bunch of other blocks without you really disrupting a market.
Yeah. And sometimes the giant block trades are dollar cost averaged across several different times of the day, just so it doesn't spook.
Well, so it's meant to not trip algorithms, essentially.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there you go. So, but like I said, about 65% of the trades are on exchange. This is from 2014. So a lot has happened since then. I'm guessing it's different now. I'm guessing it's more like 70-30. 70 on exchange, 30 off exchange. You know, I don't know for sure, though. I'm quoting 2014 data,
I mean, they clearly have some disadvantages in that it is opaque. It is necessarily opaque. It is dark. You're not meant to see it. And that creates an unfair advantage to the institutional investor who already has an advantage. But as a whole, I would say it is a giant
pool of liquidity.
I don't know if it's evil, but if it is, it's a necessary evil.
Yeah. There you go. So well said. Anyways, that's enough about that because we got to get the ball rolling. There's so much to talk about, man. Like so much has happened in the last 2 weeks. I feel like we've kind of picked a
worst part is like maybe the most interesting stuff would have happened after we recorded last week anyway.
No, that's true, right? Because we have the whole thing about the Fed chairs, Boston and Dallas Fed chair with, you know, owning holding a bunch of stocks. I don't want to get into it, but I think they're starting to divest a little bit.
I think
there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah, I think to me, my favorite thing is that this meeting, the Fed meeting that starts Tuesday, the 21st of September, my guess is that everyone's going to get there and sit down and Jerome Powell's going to roll in the TV and he's going to plug it in and he's going to say, I can't believe I have to make you guys watch the ethics video.
Right.
As he dusts off the ethics video and puts it in the VCR that they still have.
Well, so that's one of the things that they'll talk about. Another thing that came up too was the Epic Games versus Apple. Did you see that?
I've seen the lawsuit. So essentially
It's basically an app store thing, right? So it's kind of like Amazon. A lot of people want to sell their stuff on Amazon because it helps businesses.
It helps you theoretically access.
Yeah, it helps you access a larger market. So Epic Games or companies like Epic Games that have an app or gaming app, they want to be on the app store because they have an access. I mean, they can access way more customers using Apple's platform. But Apple charges a lot of money.
To do that, if you're a competitor,
pull out a giant percentage of your profits, that you might make if someone wanted to download your app or whatever. But Epic Games, Fortnite's their big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they want a lawsuit against Apple. Apparently Apple can't, something about however much they're charging to let other companies access the app store, right? That's something I wanted to go over. The stock plummeted when it happened. It hasn't gotten any better since then. So,
well, it's a, you're seeing it with Amazon now too, except Amazon's a little smarter. What Amazon's doing is that they're letting anyone be in there. And then Amazon does one of two things. They either allow a big company to buy the right to be the product shown at the very beginning. So like if you look up toothpaste, deodorant, whatever, the big brands are going to show up at the beginning and you're going to see a little word sponsored, which means they paid to be there.
Or
the
Amazon's other one is, choice, right?
Yeah. Or it's the other case. What happens is if the product looks to be making enough money and it's simple enough that Amazon thinks they can cheaply manufacture it and sell it, they will. They'll just come in and they'll make it. They'll make an Amazon brand, and then they'll go ahead and sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
For the same or less. So they'll
And they have the scale and scope to knock you out. So I think that this goes into, we talked before about antitrust. I think this is one of those things that just brings it up to the surface again. But I think it became one of those topics that was quickly forgotten because of everything else that has happened.
Yeah, they're definitely louder things. This is also a lawsuit that takes a long time. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
I think they motioned in favor of Epic.
Yeah, as I read, it's kind of a mixed bag. It wasn't everything that...
I thought it closed already. It was decided on the 10th.
But it's still what the precedent of this legal position sets. So it's like, how does this ruling affect future law going forward? Because that's, we live in a legal system where every ruling sets a precedent, and then it's how will this affect further jurisprudence in the U.S.
Yeah, wow, that's a really smart way of putting it. You used a lot of big words like jurisprudence.
Yeah, well, it's early in the episode. So apparently, they ordered.
I'm seeing that they didn't consider Apple a monopoly, but they. This kind of behavior was
anti-competitive and monopolistic.
That was the language that I saw. Yeah. So,
well, as the last one anyways, I saw, yeah, but the last,
I guess, moving into other things that have happened.
Yeah. So really quickly, we can look at we can just kind of touch back on Guinea coup in West Africa. It looks like most of the African Union has condemned it. A lot of the nations around there have condemning this as this kernel. They're saying it's a coup. They're saying it's anti-democratic. They're saying it's bad. And in response, year over year, aluminum prices are up 70%.
Well, we knew they were going to be up. They were going to be up year over year, but not by 70%.
No, not by 70%, just year over year like that.
And this is different than the lumber spike that we saw earlier this year.
Yeah, this is
that was also
because there were already some problems. There were already some problems in the aluminum supply chain before this. But the bauxite now, the lack of bauxite is a severe problem. This is a very serious issue.
Yeah, so
now it's, oh man, we had like little, we were getting nickel and dimed. Now we're getting quartered and dollared. It's.
Well, the thing is like, I still don't know anything about this guy. Like, so I don't know anything
about this. As I was reading about him, he spent some time in the French Foreign Legion.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it means he received pretty good Western style military training. And that he's used to hardship and suffering. And so, if you think about the French Foreign Legion, it's exactly
right. I'm not lying.
It's a mercenary group that's created to, kind of a brilliant idea.
I think it's interesting.
He did that. And then he went back home. I guess he joined the military there and was doing this. But now he, like I said, he told all mining interests, he told everyone to proceed as if no coup had occurred. And my guess is that the business interests are doing so.
That's right.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens. If
the markets are reacting.
Definitely, because, well, they're waiting for, they're waiting for a geopolitical determination, right? So if... Yeah. But until then,
the uncertainty makes them really want to...
Uncertainty is enough.
Yeah, well, and we all know how everybody reacts to uncertainty. Either things get really expensive, commodities get really expensive, and then uncertainty when it comes to the stock market, everything gets really cheap.
Yeah.
In this case, everybody, it seems like, is trying to reserve the right to buy aluminum at a certain price. And if not, they're trying to actually buy aluminum or bauxite or iron ore or whatever it is and then keep it in their reserves at a certain price. I mean, it seems like everybody's trying to hedge.
It absolutely is. And it's this, because I think we're seeing that I think aluminum is just slightly down from $3,000 a ton, which is the highest price it's been since 2008.
Oh, so it was actually higher in 2008?
Yeah, it was high. It was very high in 2008. So here's the big one. China's become a net importer of aluminum that it then refines into the aluminum as we know it. And so, boy, if this isn't a great time to say, this is really not going to help what's happening in China.
No.
Because here's the other thing. Australia is the world's largest producer of bauxite. They make up 110 million tons.
But I thought
Guinea produces 22% of the world's supply right now.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. They produce almost a quarter of it. So,
yeah.
So how much does Australia produce?
Almost 30%. 29.5%.
Okay. Okay, so
between the two of them.
Yeah, between the two of them, it's over half. Guinea isn't that far behind.
But remember, China's not importing stuff from Australia right now. So China, a net aluminum
importer.
Yeah,
well, that's China's fault, so.
Yeah, has picked a fight with the largest supplier and may be disrupted with the second largest supplier soon.
Well,
so.
And we'll see. I don't know if these guys are open to the idea of foreign investment from China. Also, China's been sketching everybody out with what they're doing in Taiwan and all these flyovers.
Yeah. Well, that I think is a response to what to the TSMC foundry, which should be online in 2024.
Yeah.
So we were talking
in Arizona.
We were talking about this last night. I meant to mention it, but if we look, we know that TSMC's agreed that they're going to build a 5-nanometer semiconductor manufacturing plant, which is exceptionally effective. It's actually the best that can be made right now. They've agreed that they're going to build it. Now, the guess is that by 2024, when the plant's operational, that we may be at a point where 3 nanometers is possible and is then top of the line. But five is top of the line right now, is modern right now. Most American manufacturers, so right now Intel is making either 14 nanometer or 10 nanometer. That's the best they can do. They think they have a 7-nanometer that they're working on. They think they should have that, be able to manufacture that in huge numbers sometime this year.
And Intel has
But remember, that's,
you know how like there's a CEO that everybody just feels good about or bad about? And Intel has one of those CEOs that everybody loves. The market is bullish on the CEO.
Well,
they're not necessarily bullish on Intel, but they're bullish on the CEO.
So Intel is the only American designer manufacturer that still exists. So they have foundries. So they're a designer and a manufacturer.
They have a giant foundry.
They do,
Arizona,
and they're expanding.
Actually,
they're spending $20 billion to expand that and build a
Chandler,
second one.
Where I grew up.
I saw that, and that's exciting. Here's another one that's very interesting. Samsung has announced they will spend $17 billion to build a fab in the U.S. Also, it will be in Texas, and it will be larger than TSMC's fab. So apparently, we also see that last month, DoD picked Intel to be their major manufacturer.
Yeah, well, and I think we all saw this coming. I think a lot of companies are going to try and looking at the landscape of semiconductors and thinking, you know, especially these giant tech companies, they're thinking, whoa, it costs a lot of money to buy these raw materials from companies like AMD, Intel, NVIDIA, TSMC, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So they're kind of looking at going like, you know what, maybe we can try to produce some in-house, flood the markets a little bit, provide more competitive pricing. Hopefully, to be honest with you, selfishly, I hope they do, just because I want the car companies to be able to actually start producing cars again.
Yeah, so, which would be nice.
But regardless, let's stick to China and the coup with Africa.
Well,
I know,
it's a rough
subject.
It is an interesting segue when you think about the fact that the bauxite's all theoretically supposed to head there, right? So there's our segue.
Yeah.
China.
Well, but what about the yellow cake?
What?
The yellow cake.
Don't drop that napkin.
My CIA napkin.
I was watching it the other night. It's so good. I thought that's what you were saying. I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, I was watching Chappelle's show literally today, and I watched
on Netflix.
The
it's on
Black
Netflix.
Bush. Yeah, no, all of it's on Netflix. So I watched
get
the episode
that
with Black Bush. Did you see me coming in the chest, man? I was like,
man, sending PlayStation.
Yeah, I do.
That's one of my favorite sketches.
That's probably
it's one of the better sketches. And then
I
forgot what young Bill Burr looked like initially, too.
That's right. Yeah, because I've been a huge Bill Burr fan forever.
I love Bill Burr.
Yeah, I love Bill Burr. He was also in the Sam Adams sketch.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I'll have a Samuel Jackson.
You always did. Yeah, the scripts. This is the way. You've seen my movies.
A shark ate me.
I was eaten by a shark.
Deep blue sea. A shark ate me.
But anyways, China is pretending like they're going to get eaten by a shark. Speaking of which, weird segue.
I don't know if they're pretending.
Maybe they're just trying to dive in.
I think they're
going to know that these sharks are smart and they're going to gobble them up. And they're just like, you know what? This is our fate.
So, for those of you, those of you paying attention, you'll notice that the Chinese markets are closed or were closed earlier this week. Hong Kong was closed, I believe, Wednesday. Chinese markets were closed Monday, Tuesday, which, of course, was really a perfect time for, a week before for the Chinese government to announce that Evergrande, the second largest property developer in the country, would not be paying any interest next week.
Well, and this is the thing about, I'm looking at the Hang Seng chart right now, man. That is not a good looking chart. They traded today, though, didn't they?
I thought they were
open today and closed tomorrow.
I'm seeing unchanged, which tells me they didn't open.
Oh, I don't know. But regardless, their one-month chart, not good. Their six-month chart, even worse.
Evergrande has lost 90% of its share value from last year's high.
Yeah, and then there's the Evergrande debacle. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news or not, or if you have a Twitter account or not.
What I'm hearing, is that Evergrande is the drag on. Yeah, so Hang Seng didn't open. Nikkei's down 542. S&P Asia's down 21. Yeah. This is all just over concerns about.
It's everything that China has been doing and the message that they've been trying to send. One, they hate billionaires. They cracked down it more recently.
Because
5 years ago, there were a bunch of billionaires coming out of China. They're popping up everywhere and they were showing up to concerts and they're appearing in movies and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, they just disappeared. All of them disappeared.
Yeah, so it looks
like this year.
It's quite clear that Xi Jinping is cracking down, and his conclusion is that where we'd seen for the last few years a strong liberalization in China that was allowing businesses to thrive, allowing people to accumulate huge wealth, and allowing businesses to get more and more involved in people's lives.
Yeah,
that he's decided that is not in the interest of the Chinese Communist Party, and he has begun to crack.
He's starting to crack down in
favor of more control.
Yeah. So one of the things that he's trying to crack down on is one, like, he doesn't like billionaires because billionaires, in America, billionaires have
a strong platform to have
a giant, a lot of power, a lot of weight behind billionaires here in America. In China, that was starting to catch on, right? Like billionaires they were celebrities. I don't want to say they were lobbyists, but like a lot of politicians wanted to be brushing elbows with, Jack Ma.
It's wired. The crackdowns have obviously gone after
foreign investment, right? That's a big one.
Well, here's a big thing. So if you were actually to directly invest in China, which would be, again, one of the dumbest things you can do, because at any given time, you can only take 10% of your wealth back out. That's a bad deal, which is why Hong Kong was the great doorway. You could put it into Hong Kong, and then you wanted to leave Hong Kong tomorrow, you could take all your money out of Hong Kong.
Yep.
But what you're seeing is because of very erratic I shouldn't say erratic.
No, it's erratic. You can say it.
But see, he cracks down on karaoke bars. Time teenagers can play online gaming.
Yeah, that's literally the definition of erratic.
Yeah, he's attacked the ability for there to be for-profit after-school tutoring.
Yep.
For you to have social media where you can do things that aren't necessarily state sanctioned.
Yeah.
He's also funding a large military buildup. And to the extent you're seeing Taiwan, Australia, a lot of other nations substantially closer than we are, begin to take more seriously the concept of a military threat or needing to bolster their own national security.
Yeah, but this has been in the works for a long time, and they've done this forever.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least they try to. The first thing was they didn't want any more foreign influence, foreign capital influence on the tutoring companies.
Then you see things
that was the first thing that fell was the Chinese tutoring stocks.
Actually, no. Well, they were the first. I think Ant Group was actually the first that got hurt.
Of course.
It's last October, so it's a year ago.
Yeah, but I think it kind of happened simultaneously with the financials and the tutoring stocks, right? With all those, I remember seeing all this, and I don't know, I'm not trying to accuse anybody of insider trading, but I remember seeing a lot of put options in those Chinese education stocks. I mean, it was cool. The volume was off the charts. And then all of a sudden, crackdown, and then it was over, right? And then all these puts were
you probably saw people who I don't call it insider trading. I'd say you see people who are reading what's happening and they're going, I think we're next. Because remember, it started last year when Ant Group, which was going to go IPO in Hong Kong in Shanghai. Jack Ma is one of the senior guys in it. It was from Alibaba. Yeah. And of course, suddenly they're told that they They're told that their IPO needs to be delayed. They get a $3 billion fine. They're told it's for monopolistic behavior. It's like that's rich coming from the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, and I think and I really think COVID gave China, like China as in like the CCP, a lot of power. And so, you know, the crackdown on the Ant Group, I don't know. I thought it was going to be over after that.
Well, they so the Chinese Communist Party has always had.
I didn't really look into it.
Well, so they've always had the power. It's given them kind of I think COVID probably exposed a lot more weakness in China than Beijing had admitted was there. And so now they have to crack down because
of that. That makes a lot more sense.
Because I know they also in July, like all the ride, the ride sharing people, they got in trouble.
That was with Didi.
Didi. And then ByteDance, which owns TikTok.
Oh gosh. The Chinese Communist Party
took an equity stake in that. They told them, you're giving us equity. You're giving us partial ownership of the company. And they also owned Weibo.
Weibo?
Yeah, it's like Facebook, but not really. It's like a weird combo between like MySpace and Twitter in China.
Wow.
So now the Chinese Communist Party has they now have an equity stake in both those firms. And so now you're seeing, I think, on the one hand, you're seeing a capital movement out of, I want to say it's a flight, but a capital movement out of Chinese tech stocks, because you just don't know what Beijing is going to do tomorrow. And so, why would I be in this?
So Ant Group was kind of like the first domino, but it was a tiny little domino that knocked over a slightly bigger domino that knocked over a slightly bigger domino that knocked over the Chinese tutoring and education companies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that kind of also fell with the Chinese financials.
Exactly.
And it kind of snowballed into this Chinese tech, Chinese ride sharing, social media, video games.
Which is funny because it really is kind of Beijing undoing all the... So if Beijing wants to keep being able to afford to increase the quality of life, to pay for infrastructure overseas, to push Chinese soft diplomacy into foreign nations, it needs a robust and strong economy at home to do that. And it seems like at this point, weird, right? But it seems right now like he's really like he's killing the goose that's laying the golden egg.
Well, absolutely.
And either doesn't realize or simply doesn't care.
I think it's I don't care. There's no way.
I'll be honest. I think he doesn't realize. But even if he realized, I don't think he'd care.
No, I think it's something he definitely intentionally realizes. And I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to think about who's losing the most money right now. I think the Chinese billionaires, I think those are the ones, they're losing the most wealth.
And that was true until Evergrande.
Right. But before we get into Evergrande, because I really want to talk about that, think about what would happen here in the US if you crushed Apple stock and you crushed Amazon stock and you crushed Google stock. Like you would, like entire net worth of all the billionaires in the country would fall like crazy.
Yeah, it would fall, but you'd also hurt everyone else invested in those companies.
I understand that, but like China doesn't care.
Well,
does care. Like we would actually care if like, you know, there's a bunch of Apple stockholders.
Yeah, but I would also say you would disproportionately hurt the average shareholder more than the billionaire.
Yeah, but China doesn't care. China's like, there is a billionaire. I don't care if
here's the thing is,
so they don't care. They don't care about the, I hate to say it, it sounds really bad, but I don't think they care as much.
Well, you may be right.
At least, you know, based off of what I know about China and based off of what I've seen, and I hate to throw out these accusations and I hope no one finds me here, but I'm just saying, based off of what I'm seeing, it's hard to convince me of another belief.
Yeah, no,
so,
that's just me. And I don't think they necessarily care about collateral damage at that point. I think you're right, especially with hurting the tech stocks, because the billionaire, it's going to hurt people who are heavily invested in it. It's going to hurt the people some, but I think I think once we do get into Evergrande, that's where we start to see something that's so big. I've seen people comparing it to like the Lehman Brothers.
Dude, I scroll on Twitter all the time. Like everybody's comparing Evergrande to Lehman Brothers.
I don't know if that's quite right. No. But
there are so many similarities.
It's a close enough,
approximation
that I'll let it stand.
Yeah, but Evergrande, yes. I don't know if you've been sleeping under a rock. I have until today because, I take that back. I did see a lot about Evergrande last week. I spent all weekend this weekend watching football because that's what I do every weekend during football season is just watch football on Saturday and Sunday.
That's fair.
And I remember seeing someone tweet out, how can you watch football when Evergrande is imploding? And I'm just like, because they're going to implode anyways. So why not just enjoy the Chiefs and Ravens game? That was a real nail biter. But anyways, Evergrande, they are the second biggest real estate developer in all of China. And if So what did you say it was? 2015, real estate, the real estate market in China really started to inflate. Evergrande seemed to be ahead of it. They grew to the second biggest, I think.
Yeah, so I would say since like 2015, we've consistently seen that in China, real estate has always been the safest bet for investment.
I know people. They love real estate over
and
there.
And then what happened in 2015, though, is that the Chinese stock markets crashed, and the government response and essentially the central bank response there was at best underwhelming. And what I've read from most people is that it was a disastrous response.
So Jerome Powell is not their chairman. Gotcha.
No, okay. It'd be like having like the kid who is at best a C average student in your high school econ class somehow in charge.
Well, at least he was in the econ class.
He skipped half the days. So you saw people who kind of reacted, and over the last 6 years, when you see that the stock market is not safe, and also when you look at securities and you think, well, they're really not real. Especially then you take this starting to about 2 years ago. Well, to them, they're not real. To someone in China, you might say they're not real. It's a share of something, but I can't go sit in it. But I can go sit in an apartment. I can go sit in a house. Oh, that's what I mean. Gotcha. I mean, so like real estate versus a security, right?
Yeah, you can't pour yourself a dram of whiskey in that thing and drink it.
So you had people who then you started seeing in 2019 and 2020, you started to see this speed up more. This was already probably too late by that point, but you start to see when you saw U.S. delisting companies, China requiring Chinese companies to delist from America and relist somewhere. And you started to see people going, well, even these securities, like 6 years ago, they weren't great. Now there's even more risk to them. So definitely go into real estate.
Yep.
Well, since 2015, 2016, you have Evergrande, which started with a pretty solid business model. Provide apartments and homes to people, you know, take their money, build it, build other things, build other real estate. And so eventually it's, well, let's borrow money to get ahead of it so we can build now. Well,
if you're a developer, you gotta leverage a lot. You got to have a lot of cash on hand. And if you don't have a lot of cash on hand,
you got to
go
problem.
Find a bank. Well, you got to go find a bank to give you a lot of cash.
Or if it's,
and you got to pay that back at some point on later with interest.
So that's what Evergrande did, except over the last 6 years, they became the single most indebted company in China.
Like I said,
as of this week, as of this week, the company that will not be paying any interest, it clearly doesn't have the cash to pay the interest, clearly doesn't have the cash to pay anything on principle.
They're throwing all the Hail Marys.
Equivalent of $305 billion US.
Yeah.
That is its outstanding debt. Because it's not just, the best part is it's-
Do you know
it's,
how much of it is current? How much of it is- Not as current.
I have not been able to see their books, which is kind of an issue.
Well, and even if you were able to see their books,
I'd have to translate.
I would definitely question. One, you can translate the English, but two, I would question the actual genuity of
that's
the books.
The next thing is I'd have to translate it. I'd have to translate Chinese yuan into U.S. dollars, and that would be really fun.
I don't know the exchange. I'm Chinese, but I don't even know the exchange rate. So,
They owe, and on top of that, I think they also owe.
It's a lot of debt, though,
it absolutely is.
And they don't have that much cash. It sounds like
they don't have any cash. If you see what they're offering to try and fix the problem, they're offering
a lot of desperate measures. A lot of
absolutely, they're trying to sell property at steep at fire sale discounts. If you want a parking garage, they'll build it for you. 52% off just to get cash.
Yeah, I don't even know how they break even on that. They probably don't, but they
don't.
There's an influx of cash.
But they need the capital now.
But then how do they cover the labor costs? Like I'm curious.
Their thought is if they can weather this, then they can get back on track and they can make more money then and they'll be all right.
Yeah. And China has literally come out and said, these guys are not too big to fail.
Yeah, the Chinese have certainly
they're not getting any favors, and that's like also goes back to your point when you say the Chinese central bank, their reaction is abysmal.
Well, here's the really interesting thing, because I'm not sure I would do this because it's going to hurt a lot. If they actually fail, it's going to hurt a lot of people. And I don't just mean the management, who frankly throw them under the bus. I don't care if they all end up broke tomorrow.
No,
because you don't get to run a company into the ground and walk away rich like you do in the US, but to me, what the entertaining thing is if they actually let this fail, that will make the Chinese Communist Party more capitalist than the United States government
No,
when it comes
I mean,
to a business that's made bad decisions.
You know, companies should be able to fail, you know, but I also think if it's going to hurt more people failing, which I, you know, the fact that there are so many companies here in the US that, you know, if it hurts more people failing, there's so many of those companies.
We were talking last year in October for Halloween about zombie companies and how 40% of companies listed in the US are zombies, and COVID didn't help that.
Well, and there's probably more now. And
absolutely.
I get it. Like, you know, companies have to lever up to get ahead. Evergrande, 2 years ago, everybody was probably looking at Evergrande going like, wow, these guys are geniuses. They're taking risks. They're ballsy. Like, we admire that because, you know, and think about it this way, like, take an entrepreneurship class. What do they teach you? You got to take risks to get ahead in life.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody's probably looking at Evergrande going like, wow, these guys are levering up and look how many new apartment complexes they're taking on. And then, you know, but it's always hindsight 2020. If you lever up and you get ahead and you are successful, everybody's going to call you a genius. If the opposite happens,
they're going to say you were reckless. They're going to say you were reckless.
Or you're irresponsible. Like I just called Evergrande, right? So, you know, in my opinion,
you're going to be out something. Yeah. I think so. It's not just Evergrande failing that's going to get hurt. Because I found an article in the New York Times, which was pointing out that Evergrande essentially went to its employees and told them, if you don't loan us money, you will not be receiving your bonuses. And this will be loaning us money will be remembered at your next review. So essentially, if you don't give us money, we will withhold your bonus and you will be fired.
Well, let's translate it like this. Like, if you don't give us money that we paid you, and the reason why we paid you this money in the first place is because you're making more money for us than we were paying you to make, right? In theory, right? Because, like, I'm not going to pay you – like, think of any business owner. Like, they're not going to pay someone $15 an hour if they're not making the business at least $16 an hour. I don't know how you would quantify that.
Yeah.
Or if you want to look at it this way, they're not paying you $15 an hour if they're keeping you from losing more than $15 an hour, right? So that's, in theory, what Evergrande is doing. And so they're going to their own employees saying, hey, loan us the money that we paid you because we made some pretty bad business decisions. Now we have way too much debt, $300 billion. Okay, so I'm actually saying it's $300 billion in liabilities. I don't know if that's the same thing. I don't think it is. It could very much be the same thing. It could be like all $300 billion of that could be debt. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sounds like they're throwing all these Hail Marys.
Well, they're trying to, certainly.
Yeah. And I just think them asking their employees is like the worst sign.
It's
worse than the Lehman Brothers.
Yeah. It absolutely is. It's at that point, you have tapped every other source of capital you've got. And when you go to talk to those places again, they've said no. Now, at the same time, we have to understand Beijing has been telling banks and other businesses in China that moral hazard will not be tolerated. So essentially, the government will not backstop you when you make irresponsible and bad business decisions.
Okay.
So this is a very...
I was going to ask you how to define, or I guess not how you would define moral hazard, but how China would define moral hazard.
Moral hazard is just this idea that on Wall Street, the idea of the concept of moral hazard is that you can make an extremely stupid bet, but if you're too big to fail, the government will, you're going to get a bailout. So there's a bailout there. So there's actually no disincentivization against risk. So then what's the incentive to not take those risks? There isn't one, because you know that you can turn around and demand that the government bail you out and the government's going to do it.
Well, but that is
moral hazard.
Yeah, but there's still a couple of, you know, obviously, like, if enough companies in a certain sector make a bad decision, there's still going to be a Lehman Brothers out of it, right? And I think you could call it drawing straws, you know, and who gets the shortest stick,
they become
Lehman Brothers.
My suspicion is that China will at some point step in to arrest the contagion before it really infects all of the Chinese real estate market.
Really?
They're
communists.
I do not think Evergrande will exist at the end of it, but I think they will go into stopgap damage to other sectors, right? So here's what I mean by that. So the first thing we're seeing is that Chinese steel production has been reduced. Why? Well, it's not just because they don't have raw materials, because they have enough raw materials. They just may not like the price of it. But they have slowed down steel production because they've looked and they've said Evergrande will not be able to buy steel. Mm-hmm. So they will not be building anything. So we don't need to produce as much steel.
Yeah.
So that's what we're seeing. So we're seeing that the Chinese construction material businesses if they're something that they have to manufacture, they're going to slow down with their manufacturing because they see a slowdown coming. They've already been in a slowdown. The economy, their market's already been slowing down. Now they're seeing one of the big guys going.
That was self-imposed. And then there's this. Uh-huh. There's a lot of fear now. There's a lot of uncertainty as mm-hmm. to who might be next.
Well, now think about every small guy, the $300 billion, the people that that's owed to. Some of it's bondholders. Some of it's suppliers, right? Uh-huh. So if you're a supplier, you're sitting here now going, how much money do they owe me? How critical is that to my business? Because if, say, owed $6 billion and I can't afford to not receive payment and I'm a supplier, I'm out of business now.
Yeah. So think about it like this, right? If you run a bar and you just don't have enough money to buy the next liquor shipment and you have a good relationship with that vendor, so you're just like, look, I can't pay for these 6 bottles of Eagle Rare. Can you throw me a bone and the next time you ship me 6 bottles, I'll pay for 12 bottles?
Yeah, essentially, right? I can't pay you on time. I'm going to be late, but yeah. I need stock to sell because blank.
Yeah, so you know, so the liquor vendor throws you a bone. It's kind of like the same thing with the Chinese with the suppliers of Evergrande. They're saying, all right, fine, you're a big company. You're a reputable company at the time.
Yeah.
We know word is good. And
even then, say your contract was on a 60-day or 90-day contract. I sold to you 2.5 months ago when this wasn't an issue.
Yep.
Well, I knew you had a lot of debt. No, you were still paying the interest on all your products. You were sitting here saying it's fine, things are going to be great. And now here I am 3 months later and suddenly you're going, I'm not paying any interest on my debt and I'm not paying back any debt.
Yeah, and I mean, how do they accrue?
Now I'm sitting here going, what?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously they're reputable enough to accrue $300 billion, but I'm just like, what? I mean, how do they do that? I mean, granted, like, the reason why they're in this situation was because I think Chinese real estate was really hot. I mean, it was insanely.
Oh yeah.
I think China had probably the most expensive real estate aside from New York and San Francisco. And I think it was just one of those things where everybody wanted some sort of exposure towards that real estate market.
So
a lot of people were willing to be on the other side of those deals.
Let me give you an idea of how big Evergrande is in terms of its incomplete jobs right now. So it owes something like 106 uh-huh. million apartments or something. It's,
oh my gosh.
Now, yeah. So
units?
I'm sorry, it's 1.6 million. So Evergrande currently has 1.6 million apartments that it owes to people who have already paid for them. So they have 1.6 million apartments they have to deliver.
So
now this is the equivalent.
Buildings or units?
1.6 million units.
That's still a lot.
The equivalent, that is the equivalent of 3/4 of Manhattan's floor space.
Really?
Total floor space.
So 75% yes. of all units in Manhattan.
Yes.
It's the same.
No. Not just apartment units. All the floor space.
Floor apartments, space. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Square footage. Yes.
Offices, all of it. So,
oh, dang. Okay. So
floor space.
Yeah.
75% of the available floor space of Manhattan.
That is a lot.
Across
that is
everything
quite a bit.
Is what is owed to people who have already paid for it by this company.
Yeah. That's so much leverage. I mean, I don't know how they got into that, but I know, like, at one point, I think from 2017 to 20, really before COVID, Chinese real estate markets were going nuts. And then for a while there during COVID, the real estate markets were going nuts again.
Well, people, so what it boils down to is that a lot of people in China, when they're looking to make an investment, they buy a second apartment.
Yeah. I mean, but that's kind of happening here in the U.S. too, where like a lot of people are buying another house and renting it out in the U.S. when they want to invest, but they don't want exposure to the stock market. So what do?
Buy real estate.
So I think essentially that's what's happening. I mean, the spillover, I think, is just absurd.
I mean, it's like they owe their employees a loan through that lend us your money. They owe their employees $145 million.
Yeah. And I just think that move, I mean, I've never seen a bigger cry for desperation than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then, you know, I sent you that chart about the Chinese 5-year credit default swaps.
Oh, yeah. It's,
right? Remember that one? So it was pretty flat last Friday, tiny little spike on Friday. And I say tiny little spike because normally it'd be a huge spike.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why it was a tiny little spike was because today's spike in their credit default swaps are insane. So a lot of people are trying to protect themselves from.
So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of companies started leaving China before COVID and then during COVID and due to COVID. So a big one I'll talk about is like Samsung Heavy Industries.
Yep.
Samsung moved all its cell phone production out of China in 2019. And mm-hmm. everyone thought it was brilliant. It was a genius idea. And then we get to COVID and they realized actually this was a stupid idea because we didn't move component production out of China too. So now component production for Samsung is probably going to leave China. You're going to see a lot of other Korean companies do that too with their own parts because, again, they've noticed if China shuts down hard, we won't have components to produce our stuff, even though our factories here are fine and running. So you've got chunks of China where you're seeing huge swaths of industry disappear. And on top of that, think about who gets hit then. So I look at the steel and concrete guys are in real trouble. So steel, pretty important to shipbuilding and pretty important to real estate. Well, if shipbuilding, and it's not all going to go away, but if foreign shipbuilding leaves at the same time as a housing downturn, you have a steel downturn. Your concrete guys, if the second largest manufacturer of property in the nation fails, and you're a concrete producer, you have a very serious issue because you've been producing to supply them and they're now gone.
Yeah, well, you've been producing with the expectation that they're going to be a reliable customer for years and years to
and
come.
And you've expanded your industry as well on that. That's to say nothing of whether or not they owe you money right now.
Exactly.
Which they do.
And you forecasted also there all the times that they're going to continue to buy from you because you don't see their books. You don't think that they're actually facing $300 billion in liabilities right now.
So, yeah, and even if you know they've accrued. So now let's talk about like Chinese bond markets. Because if you really want to look at it, no one's willing to touch the Evergrande bonds right now. There are people trying to hedge.
Why would you?
Well, let me phrase this. There's a price, but it's not what, let's put it this way, it's not what they're offering.
Yeah, it's at a very, very deep discount.
Yep.
The yield is probably insane.
Oh, yeah.
Insanely high because it's trading at a massive
discount.
Well,
on top of that, their instruments were high interest. I think they were C-rated bonds going into
this. I mean, that almost sounds generous.
But they were, but, I said going into this. I know.
Yeah. I mean, so they owe a lot of money, obviously, to all kinds of creditors, including their own employees, including their suppliers, including banks, bondholders, preferred shareholders. From the looks of it, they're also trying to sell, not just sell, but they're trying to do deals. They're trying to win contracts for a huge discount just because they need an influx of cash. And like when we say they have no cash, they probably have like $100 million. But a lot of it's probably not their own.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like they will have millions of dollars, but at the same time, when you owe high rate of interest on $300 billion, you know, you could have $145 million and not be able to pay it back, even if they're just paying a 10% coupon rate. So they have a coupon due Thursday. They have interest on some bank loans and some loans their employees due today. They have a bond coupon due Thursday, and they've just said, we cannot afford to pay it. They brought in restructuring people, but what do you do?
Yeah, but you're spending money doing that.
Well, they have to, but they have what I would describe as, at best, weak corporate governance, and they owe too much money to too many people.
Yeah, and possibly too many favors to too many people.
Well, they've also, some of my favorites is that they've tried like turning to some of their people they owe money to, and they're like, well, we'll give you property. We'll give you real estate to forgive the debt.
But real estate's also a declining asset over there. So
well, right now, but also the same people are sitting here going, are you offering us the property that you can't sell to pay the debt? So when I try to sell it, who am I going to sell it to? Because no one wanted to buy it earlier. Why would they want to buy it now?
Yeah, so, I mean, their assets are lopsided.
They had every chance to arrest the slide.
Yeah.
But they...
I'm still like, how do you... Like, don't you know that $300 billion in liabilities is more than probably everything you have? And not to mention, if it's all coming due this week, because it's all coming due this week,
remember? Well, they have a coupon due this week, and then they have loans due this week. Well, it's not all due this week.
Not all of it, you're right, yeah, but they have a lot coming due this week. And I think the reason why this is so noteworthy is because it's my assumption is that what they have coming due this week is more than all the cash that they have on their books.
Absolutely.
My assumption is. So if they default, man, that's... Like we need a bankruptcy proceeding.
Yeah. So
that's the way it would happen here.
So looking at their bonds right now, they have 6 bonds that mature next year, 10 that mature in 2023, and it's issued. So they've issued 24 bonds. They have 24 bond issuances, and 16 of them are due in the next 2 years.
Yeah. And when they're due, think about it this way. It's like, if you borrowed $100,000 to buy a house, if they're due, you got to pay the $100,000 all of it back.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what happens at maturity is that par value, that needs to get paid.
Yeah, you need to pay the face value. And let's put it this way, if they can't afford the coupon, they can't afford the face value.
Yeah, well, that's putting it very politely. That's wow. You're really buttering that.
Ooh, hang on. You know? As I'm reading, it's actually getting worse. So on Thursday, it's due to pay $83.5 million in interest on its March 2022 bond. And it has another $47.5 million payment due on September 29th on a batch of March 2024 notes. Both of those bonds would default if the company fails to settle interest within 30 days of a scheduled payment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where if they if they default, they have to pay back the entirety of the loan?
They have to pay the entirety back. So those are probably secured bonds. Those are almost certainly secured bonds against assets. So 1/12, so nearly 10% of their bonds would fail if they don't make the payment within 30 days of Thursday.
But if it's, yeah, but think about
it. Two of their big bonds would fail.
But if it's secured against their assets, and their assets, obviously, and their equity is declining in value, then the bond is also probably declining drastically in its value. So yeah, but in the markets, it's probably...
Remember, when I took a bond, when we did these bonds, we would have done them against property or against equipment. And it's property where I sit and I say, like, you know what? There's the market value, and then there is just an inherent value that I'm willing to value it at. Mm-hmm. So whoever was requiring them, whoever put the covenant, that covenant on it and required these to be secured bonds, which I assume they are, if they have that kind of the bond will default. Well, that means that we're coming in to seize something. It's something that we looked at and we said, even if, you know, we've decided this property has this value, that we will be made whole.
Yeah, I mean, but that's still, I mean,
it's a hell of a, better than having an unsecured bond.
Right. But generally speaking, at that point, it's probably what? It's probably a junk bond. So,
I think every single bond that they put out is junk bond.
I know now that, yeah, but I'm saying if it's unsecured, it's like they're probably going to not give it a AAA rating if it's unsecured. So, I don't know. Anyways, I hate to be like this, but I kind of want to wrap up right here just because
let's wrap up on one. Can we wrap up on one, just one funny thing?
Yes, but I will say this before we get to that one funny thing. I do see some questions. We got some questions from Instagram. Someone asked us about portfolio, so building shares of a portfolio. I want to answer that, but I'll answer it next week.
Yeah,
just because I love that question.
It's a great question, but it's one that I want to couch our answer very carefully. Because remember, guys, we're not giving you financial advice. We're trying to we're trying to give you an idea of what's happening, where ripple effects come from, where ripple effects are going, and how to look at economics, how to look at markets, how to look at accounting. How to interpret all the data out there, right? Because data is useless until it's been turned into information.
Yeah, and I really encourage everybody that listens to challenge the things that we say. I mean,
if we say something that sounds...
Don't take everything we say for face value. If we say something that's kind of like, whoa, I don't know if that's true, challenge us.
Sounds
like,
wrong. Yeah. Tell us what it was. Tell us why you think we're wrong, and we'll look at that, and we'll get... I promise we'll get back to you.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, what were you going to say? What funny thing?
All right. You know how we've always made fun of the credit rating agencies being not necessarily accurate?
Yeah. And also, I think a lot of conflict of interest is involved in
their
business practices.
Well, let's look at exactly what that looks like. So Moody's was giving them a CA from CAA1.
No. I can't handle the cringe right now.
What a negative outlook. Fitch downgraded Evergrande from CC to CCC+. And is flagging a probable default. Here's what China's Chengxin probable default.
I assume absolutely certain default is not that an actual rating. Is that not?
When in accounting, when we use the word probable, what we really mean is I don't see how it doesn't happen. So those are two American.
We put it like that.
Those are two American. So that's Moody's and Fitch.
Ratings agencies here in the States.
Guess what happened in China? The Chengxin International Credit Rating Company, or CCXI, they downgraded Evergrande too. This is all this month. They downgraded it to AA from AAA.
What? See, this is what I mean. Like, I understand that every single country in the world, they all like to spew out the facts that make them look better.
Yeah.
They all do that. But I think China does it worse than everybody. I think they...
Yeah, they're not subtle. I mean, they lack subtlety.
Yeah.
They're like the kid in elementary school who, like, when it's like, what did you guys do on your summer break? And, like, everyone's like, oh, I went to the beach, or, oh, we did this. And, like, some of that might not be true, but then China's the kid that shows up and is like, oh, I learned to fly a helicopter. And he's like, four.
Yeah, he's like four, and he's like, no, I flew across Monaco.
Like, oh, no, I learned to fly a helicopter. We shot down a plane. And it's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah,
we know you didn't.
It in a video game, but, like, you obviously didn't actually do it in real life. So
when you say, like, no, you didn't. Yeah. No, I drove I flew the helicopter to school today. Okay, where is it? Well, my dad took it back home. Like, that's like, you know, we saw you all get off the same bus, right?
Yeah, and it's like, it's all, you know, it's still like a matter of he said, she said. And there's still people going like, well, China's legit, right? I mean, they don't lie. Why would they lie about it?
My view has always been historically that the Chinese number, like when China says, like, our consumer confidence is up 2.3% versus expected 7%. It's like, no,
it's
probably negative and you just don't want to admit it. Or you're like, oh yeah, we're up 0.1% to show growth, but everyone else is like expecting 4%, and it's like, no, you had negative growth, you're just lying.
Yeah, and it's easier to do that with numbers like consumer confidence, investor confidence, all that numbers like that aren't actually quantifiable, right? It's like retail sales.
Yeah.
It's like,
or they'll say like, oh, retail sales. Numbers. Retail sales were only up 3% when it was like, oh, we were expecting 12. And it's like,
why were you expecting 12? Yeah. Right. So
like I said,
I never trust the Chinese data.
Credit ratings agencies. And you can see Fitch and Moody's have been downgrading for the last few months. You could just watch the trickle of just them going like, yeah, we don't like it. We still don't like it. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. It's getting ugly.
Down, yeah.
And whereas.
And then street ratings on the actual stock, you know, reduce, sell, you know.
Yeah. Then you've got China Chengxin International Credit Rating Agency, which finally decides this AAA month to go, hey, they're not AAA anymore. They're just AA.
Get the heck out. Yeah. I don't get it. But Synteskis Bjorn. I hope we answered your question. I think it's more of just an outlook on Chinese real estate, to be honest with you. I mean, Chinese real estate in the last 5 years, think of it, I think it was pretty much similar to what happened from 2001 to 2007. Pretty similar. I don't know. But then all of a sudden the crackdown started happening. And it's like everybody wanted out of everything in China.
Yeah,
at least that's the way I see it. I'm summarizing it very, I'm giving you the cliff notes.
I think you're starting to see other companies leave China before this.
Yeah.
I think you're going to start seeing other Korean companies going too. What I'll say is it's all going to depend on what the Chinese government decides to do. If they let it fully fail, this could be a disaster. Really for them, I think it's pretty insulated. I don't think it leaves. It hurts Asian markets. It hurts Hong Kong. I don't think it hits Europe. I don't think it hits the United States. I don't think it hits Australia in a meaningful way.
Really?
I mean, while it might damage some of the raw material imports, they were already doing stuff like that anyway, so it's not like it's going to be a sudden shock.
I actually agree with you on that.
And then a lot of the financial exposure, people aren't really heavily invested in Evergrande. And if when you saw the debt piling up and you saw Fitch and Moody's and other credit rating agencies downgrading the value and you stayed in, well, you know what they say, pigs eat, hogs get slaughtered. So you need to look at your risk tolerance. I think you were willing to tolerate too much risk with this firm, and now you're getting your just desserts for that. I don't have... The only people I look at that I feel legitimately bad for in this are suppliers who were operating in good faith, assuming they'd be paid.
Yeah.
And
I feel bad for some of the debt holders. Right?
I feel bad for the employees. I feel bad for...
I was going to say, those are the only debt holders
I feel bad for. I look at a lot of the other... So creditors, if you were like a supplier who's getting built, if you bought an apartment that is probably not going to get delivered now, I feel bad for you. If you're one of those employees, I feel bad. But if you're someone who is buying this debt, when you're looking at it and they're saying, oh, we're going to pay you. Like, remember, these were high interest security, debt securities.
Exactly.
High interest notes. These were high risk securities. They told you.
But
they flat out told you these were high risk.
But I understand there's people that like to speculate on high risk, high yielding, quote unquote, bonds, right? I get it. I do feel bad for them a little bit, right? I feel a little bit bad, but then again, like,
I feel bad.
There's risk in every investment, so this is just what it is.
Today's the day you learn.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's running up to Evergrande going like, hey, where's the money? And the people I feel bad for the most, like I said, you know, I feel bad for some of the debt holders, but yeah, like you said, I feel bad for the suppliers. I feel bad for the people that bought an apartment that were expecting to get delivered, and these guys didn't come up with the resources to do so, and I feel the worst for the employees. That's absolutely kind of have actually loaned the money.
It wasn't a loan. They were coerced. They were.
I know. I say loans with bunny ears, but I feel terrible. You know, and it's just like, you know, if you've been working there for 20 years and you know you're still expecting to get promoted to vice president, and they've told you that for the last 5 years, and that's what kept you on, and all of a sudden you gave them a loan because they're like, look, if you don't give us a loan, it's going to be on your review, right? You don't believe in the company. And, you know, what are you going to do? And then now you're not going to get your money back. And no, it's money that they paid you.
It's coercion, plain and simple. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what I said earlier. It's money that they paid you that you earned them. But anyways, with that said, I'm all done here with my whiskey.
Florida man finished the Florida man.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, the Cigar City, man. Awesome brewery. Next week, let's talk about what's going to happen with the debt ceiling. Because October is right around the corner. Next week is the last episode before October.
Yeah, guys. Here's our preview for next week. So next week's going to be the last before the U.S. has to make its big coupon payments and other big expenditures. It's when Janet Yellen has warned the U.S. may be at risk of default. So let's look at, if you thought Evergrande was bad, let's show you. Hold my beer, for lack of a better term. Hopefully not. But I'm just saying, there are definitely some people who are saying, hold my beer.
Yeah.
So next week, we're going to touch on that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that. And then, you know, from there, you know, we talked about social media. at Drunkenomic. We'll find us there. Merch, my spreadsheet.
It's drunkenomics.myspreadshop.com.
That's what it is. I think.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Absolutely
nice.
Is. All right, guys.
I'm glad you know it by heart. So from there, last but not least, Patreon, if you feel so inclined, I would really appreciate it. I think James would appreciate it.
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? Of course he would appreciate it.
We want to keep our lights on, our liquor cold. We want to keep our lights on, our liquor cabinet stocked, the fridge is cold, and the ice frozen.
Yes.
So
exactly.
So every little bit helps, guys.
Yeah, and we appreciate all of it. So
you can join us next week to figure out which one of us is the gracious host.
Yeah, exactly. Please do. I hope you had a great drink yourself. I hope you played chestnut checkers. I hope you were just saying, not bragging. And last but not least, I hope for the rest of the week that you always do that thing that, what is it called?
Well, I'm going to say this, guys. I'm going to need you all to stay drunkenomical because between last week, this week, and next week, if you don't, no one else will.
Exactly. Stay drunkenomical, my friends, and cheers.
Cheers.
A Huda Media Production.